Right, everyone, shall we make a start? First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for coming. It's really great to see students engaging with the wider community as well, as we are residents of Sheffield, so we deserve to be engaged in that as much as anyone else. I'd also like to thank members of the CCG for the panel for joining us here today. It's great that they're being so open and transparent about what's going on. And it's great that so many students are here for accountability and for scrutiny of these really, really important plans that can have quite a big effect. Some members of the CCG will be joining us slightly later, a bit later on. A few housekeeping things as well. So the toilets, they're upstairs to the right, and the gender-neutral toilets are right there. There is no fire drill planned, so if it does go off, please evacuate to the concourse area, which is just up the stairs near the bridge sort of area. That's great. So without much further ado, I'd like to hand over to CCG to kick us off.
Thank you very much, Kieran, and thanks for hosting us tonight. We're getting towards the end of our consultation period. This is one of many meetings we've had, but we're really pleased to be at the Union to talk about how our proposals might affect students, and we're really keen to hear what you think. I should just introduce myself first. My name's Tim Moorhead. I'm a GP in the city. I've lived in the city most of my life. Went to Sheffield University, and I've been a GP for about 23 years. My practice is in Uteybridge in the north of the city. I don't know if that's possibly not on your radar. It's a little way out. But it's where the Tour de France came into the city a few years ago. Went straight past my surgery and didn't stop for an appointment. So that's where I work most of the time. But the reason I'm here is because I'm also the chair of the Clinical Commissioning Group, the CCG. As you see our logo at the top there, NHS Sheffield CCG. And unless you know about how the minutiae of the NHS works, you'll wonder what a CCG is. But very, very briefly, if you want to know more, you can ask me a bit later, but I want to get onto our proposals. But our job is, as part of the NHS, we are involved in planning and commissioning health services in Sheffield. It also involves using the budget that the government give us to pay for those services. So that's our role as part of the NHS. And it's led by GPs, but with the help of managers and some people with specialised finance and other knowledge. I've got a couple of colleagues here who are also both GPs. I'm sure will introduce themselves in a minute when we get to our question and answer session. So we're here to tell you about our proposals around urgent care. I've got a short presentation, a few slides. I'll try not to bore you to death with slides, because what we really want to do here is listen to what you think, what your concerns are, your ideas. As well as getting your feedback tonight, and we'll be taking some notes about some of your concerns and so on, we're also interested that you respond online, which you can do through the CCG website, and you can return the questionnaire that's in the back of this document, which I think we had a few of those at the back. You can find these in your practice, for example, and other places, and if you wanted to, you could give the CCG a ring if you wanted to. There's a questionnaire in the back. We have already had more than 1,000 of these back, so if you wanted to fill it in hard copy, as it were, you can do it that way if you want. So let me tell you a little bit about some of the things we're proposing. We're talking about urgent care, which is appointments within 24 hours and mostly the same day. You don't need that for everything, do you? You know, if you need just your inhaler renewed or something, you don't need an urgent appointment. So it's not everything you need, it's just the urgent part of the care you need. Most urgent care is provided in general practice. It is provided in other places, and we'll talk about those in a minute, but most of it is done in general practice. It's treatment for, as it says on the slide, for minor illness and minor injuries that are urgent but not life-threatening. This is not about emergencies, which should still be dealt with through the A&E departments and through ambulances and so on. This is about the urgent care that you need fairly quickly, but not as an emergency. We have a range of places apart from our 86 or whatever it is now practices in the city. 82, it keeps changing. 82 practices in the city at the moment where most of this happens. It happens at pharmacists and opticians. It happens at the walk-in centre on Broad Lane, the minor injuries unit, which is at the Hallamshire Hospital, in the eye clinic at the Hallamshire Hospital, and the out-of-hours GP service, which is based at the Northern General. So there's just a few examples of various other places apart from practices that do urgent care. Now, we think we have a reasonable system in the city at the moment, but we think there are a number of reasons why we need to make changes for the future. There's a few of the reasons there on that slide. There are falling numbers of healthcare professionals. You're probably aware of this. The nursing crisis was in the news last week, or was it the week before? But it's an ongoing problem. It's not just a last week story. So, for example, UCAS have reported 700 fewer nurses started training in England in 2017, for example. The GP problem is one you may have heard of also. According to a BMA survey, a third of partners said they're unable to fill their vacancies in the last 12 months. And 40% of GP practices had GPs planning to retire in the next 5 years. So people planning to go, but a great difficulty filling up those posts. In Sheffield, actually, we've been relatively lucky. We have got a few outstanding vacancies that are hard to fill, but we're not doing too badly normally. But it's only going to help us to stand still. That only really addresses the first of those bullet points. The second one is the growing demand for services and also the complexity of problems that people have these days. Lots and lots of people, not just old people, of course, it includes young people, it includes students, are living with a condition that you can't cure but you can treat. It might be sometimes, in some cases, perhaps not the most serious illnesses, but nevertheless need proper care, like I might mention asthma, although that can occasionally be a serious thing. But there can be other significant long-term illnesses that you need that can be complex at times. People have told us when they need urgent care, they've come back to us and said, and this is thousands of people have told us this, that it's confusing. They can't decide where they should go for urgent care. It's not clear in Sheffield where they should go. Lots of people tell us how difficult it is to get GP appointments. That's pretty much at most practices, not just in this city, but in lots and lots of the country. We would also like to make care available closer to people's homes so that people don't have to travel all over the city or even further for the care they need. And of course, we want to make best use of services and staff. We're constantly looking for efficiencies and improvements that we can get in the health service. I think it is probably a good time to say, well, hang on, let me just do this next slide. So these are the proposals. We want to improve the way people get services, change the way people in particular get urgent GP appointments. This is probably the most important bit because that's where most of this care happens already. We would also like to change where people go for minor illness and injury and where people can go for urgent eye care. But I'm going to just say, I'll go straight on before I dwell on some of those things. What we're not doing, we're not cutting or reducing any services. This is not about reducing services. We're not changing planned appointments. This is only about urgent care. We're not closing an emergency eye clinic, or in spite of the fact the Star reported that 2 or 3 months ago. We've never said we were going to do that. And also, these changes aren't going to happen this winter. And the last thing, which isn't on that slide, we're not proposing to reduce the amount of money we spend on urgent care. We're intending to keep it the same. So this is not about the money. This is actually about how we use our services. I'm just going to go back to that slide. The first thing I'd like to say about improving the way people access services is we want, instead of there being a very confused way of getting into services, we would like people to be able to simply phone their practice or phone 111, as simple as that. And then you will speak to somebody over the phone who will be skilled in triage. They might even be able to solve your problem on the phone, but when they can't, you will then be booked an appointment or signposted to the right place for the care that you do need. So that's the first thing, is the way you get into the services. We don't want to completely get rid of being able to walk in and wait, but we think that is the way that most people would prefer to get in for appointments. Second thing is to change the way people get their urgent GP appointments. We're going to ask groups of practice to work together to offer urgent appointments within 24 hours, or preferably on the same day. We already have 16 neighbourhoods where our 82 practices are starting to work together to think about this. People will be assessed to decide if they do need to see their own GP because they have a long-term condition that requires that they see the same team. Then, if possible, that's what we want to see happen. Currently, that is not guaranteed. But if that can't be done, or if the if a patient doesn't need that, then they can be seen at a local practice nearby. So people are not travelling all over the city. They're accessing services locally. I'll talk a little bit about what we're proposing about minor illness and injuries in a couple of minutes. And then the last thing I'll just say about urgent eye care. Currently, if you have an urgent eye problem, you have to go to the emergency eye clinic at the Hallamshire. In future, we would like to offer appointments at locations across the city where optometrists have had special training to deal with urgent eye problems. Currently, we don't have that available. But again, that means people don't have to travel across the city and they can get care closer to where they live. True emergency sight-threatening eye conditions will continue to be seen at the Hallamshire in the same unit. So that's a very quick oversight of what those things are. The options for the urgent treatment centres, if you do have access to this this document, this page 3 is the best page to explain what the options 1, 2 and 3 are. And we're quite interested, if you do get the opportunity to have a look at that or have a look online. I realise that most of you haven't got this in your hand, so I'm going to very quickly read out our preferred option. First of all, option 1 is that both minor illnesses and minor injuries are seen at an urgent treatment centre at the Northern General Hospital, which of course is where the adults A&E is. So adults will go there to the urgent treatment centre for both minor illness and minor injuries. Children with minor illnesses would go to the urgent treatment centre based at the Children's Hospital, and minor injuries would be seen in the emergency department, which is where they're seen now. So that's a relatively small change. Option 2 would be both for adults, for both minor illnesses and minor injuries at the urgent treatment centre at the Northern General Hospital, which is the same as option 1, but for the children, minor illnesses would be seen at the Northern instead of the children's, but minor injuries continue to go to the A&E department. So that's a very small difference really, but would affect children mainly. Option 3 sees minor illnesses at the urgent treatment centre at the Northern General Hospital for adults, and minor injuries also at the Northern General in the emergency department. So that's slightly different. And then for children, minor illnesses at the Children's Hospital and minor injuries at the emergency department in the Sheffield Children's Hospital. So there's some slight differences there in options 1, 2 and 3. We think option 1 is the best because it's the simplest. To do that, we are suggesting, because we don't have more money to do this, we can't run endless services, we are suggesting that we would not continue with the walk-in centre that we've currently got on Broad Lane or the minor injuries unit at the Hallamshire. Briefly, urgent treatment centres. The government has suggested that, NHS England have said we have to have these in the next little while, but they are fairly simple in concept. They are simple for people to understand. You can go for both injury and illness. You know, how do you know if what you've got is an injury or an illness? Sometimes it's obvious, but sometimes it's not. So you don't have to worry about diagnosing yourself before you even start. They can access your records, which currently the units we've got can't. They can get direct access to diagnostics like x-rays and blood tests and so on. And it's an effective use of staff. So we think that those are the advantage. You can read this slide for yourself. Some patients already go to A&E for urgent rather than emergency treatments, and we can redirect them if necessary, and sometimes it is necessary to go to the emergency department, and then you're already in the right place. I think the less confusing part of this proposal is an important thing, because that's one of the main things that people have told us about our current system. It's too confusing. So taken together, we think that that will give us better urgent care in Sheffield. 24-hour guarantee is what we are proposing. The right care closer to where you are, so you're not travelling around all the time. Now, there's a couple of things I actually sort of want to just reflect some of the things we've already heard about what students have said to us. A couple of concerns about closing the walk-in centre because students do use that. Also concerns about closing the minor injuries unit because it's close to where a lot of students are. And concern about travelling across to the northern and cost implications. So a few people have already reflected some of those concerns and you may want to say something about that this evening. Improving access when you have minor illness symptoms is something I'd like to hear a little bit about today, if some of you have got a view about this. Some discussion about why you think students use the walk-in centre. Is it because you can't get in to see your GP? Is it because you don't know where else to go? Is it just convenient or some other reason? So it would be quite helpful to hear why people do use that facility rather than go to their own practice. Similarly with minor injury, again, that just kind of goes over some of those similar points. I think it would be interesting perhaps to know why some people choose not to register with a GP in Sheffield at all and stay registered at home. There are a couple of reasons why that's not a good idea. The main thing is that if you do need urgent treatment, we can't access your records here in the city, and if you have a long-term condition, it might be important that we know what care you've had before. So if you're not registered, then that's probably not a good idea. The other minor thing, but it makes a small difference, is that if you're still registered at home, the funding for the NHS stays back in your hometown and doesn't come to Sheffield where you actually are. So if you have a health need, we're not getting the funding to help us to address that. Minor thing, but I would say that, wouldn't I, because that's the one I'm concerned about. But it is a helpful thing if people do register locally. A couple of other things we've heard so far, not so much about students, but from many of the other meetings that we've held, and other feedback we've had, concern about travelling over to Northern General and parking there. Most patients do want to be seen in their local area, so most on the whole, this better access to GP proposal, which is the most important proposal, most people are in favour of that. And most people are happy to go to another GP practice if they can get access quickly. Not everybody, but most people. So there's a few things we've heard already, because we're quite late on now in the consultation process. We've got a couple of days left, actually. So this is one of our last meetings to discuss our proposals. So you have the opportunity to hear what some other people have said already. You might disagree with some of that, and it'd be interesting to hear what you do say. So we've actually extended the consultation into January. We intended to take it only till the end of till just before Christmas, but we've extended it so that people can feedback. It's a genuine consultation. By the way, these plans are being led by me and my colleagues as Sheffield doctors, because we think this is better for Sheffield. This is not a government diktat, if you like. It's not been handed down to Sheffield that we've got to sort this out kind of thing. It's because we think this proposal will make urgent care better from the perspective of Sheffield patients and people using Sheffield services. So please give us your views. We've got, I believe, until 8 o'clock, so opportunity to discuss some of what you've heard and some of what you've read about. I was going to propose to sort of chair this meeting, if you like, and we could take two or three questions, and I'll perhaps ask my colleagues and also fill in a little bit from time to time. So should we start at the end, and we'll take two or three hands up over there. There's a roving mic, so it's a big lecture theatre, so it might be a good idea if you could wait for the mic to come. And then, so what was proposed, we'll take two or three questions at a time, and then we'll come to colleagues on the panel here.
Hi, I'm a medical student here in Sheffield. So I've got two, one's a question and one's sort of a question. The first question is, could you expand a little bit on how the urgent treatment centre would actually occur in Northern General, what the cost would entail, where it's proposed to be? And my second point is to do with the media. Something that we've seen a lot in the media recently has been people not being clearly accessed where to go. They're just being told by 111 to go straight to A&E. And as a result, there's actually a lot more public education campaigns to try and inform people a lot better about where to go. You've said it's very confusing, the system that we've got at the moment. This, to me, sounds just as confusing, calling your GP and being told to go to another practice. So yeah, I just wanted you to justify that a little bit more.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that this isn't about cuts and that it doesn't have anything to do with £40 billion worth of cuts since 2010 projected to 2020, and also nothing to do with the PFI debt, £300 billion, which is, of course, four times the deficit. Now, you've said that we're not going to be, that this is confusing. Well, we won't be confused when we know where we can't get treatment. We might be confused as to where Northern General is as students. And you've said that this is a genuine consultation. Well, if you ask people for a genuine consultation in which all three of the options are closing Hallamshire Minor Injuries Unit, that's not a consultation, that's a farce. Now, if you're going to claim that this, just for the sake of argument, we agree that this isn't about cuts to the closure of the Hallamshire Minor Injuries Unit in the city centre ward, it doesn't constitute a cut, and that you're not making cuts. Would you be so kind as to tell us what you intend not to cut next? I'm an associate student, and I'm also a member of Sheffield Sabre NHS, and we're not in favour of the clinical commissioning group plans, and we intend to do something about it. We've forced back the consultation period already, and we're going to use this time to build serious and sustained opposition, including monster demonstrations. Now, we've been holding our own consultations on the streets, petitioning the public, informing as many people as possible so they know what the story is before it's too late. Now, to put it very mildly, people in Sheffield take a very dim view indeed of these nigh-on secret plans to close their NHS services. Now, we've already collected 10,000 signatures opposing the closures, and so as a prelude to the perpetual commotion that we're going to be making until now in the final decision, this Saturday, that's February the 3rd, we're going to be protesting outside the Hallamshire Hospital. We urge you to attend. Don't prevaricate. Please take decisive action now while there's still an NHS left to defend. If you just look, it can be done. Look to Leicester. Just last November, NHS England were trying to close Glenfield Children's Heart Centre. A mass campaign stopped that closure. In December, a baby girl was born there with a beating heart outside her body, thanks to the specialism and the skill of those doctors. It would have been lost. That knowledge would have been lost otherwise. Those skills would have been lost and the services wouldn't have been accessible. This is too precious to lose. So please don't wait. We don't want another more cut. We don't want another closure. No more top-down reorganisations and an end to all privatisations. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk at the beginning, just briefly outlining what was involved. I just had a few questions about the staffing levels of this new thing, and you know how it's going to be planned out. So, I mean, firstly, people who are working at the minor injuries unit, currently, are they, you know, going to lose their jobs, or are they going to be transferred over to this this new place? And secondly, I mean, in order to run this service at the Northern, are you going to be, you know, employing these people from the minor injuries unit, or are you going to be taking people from, you know, current posts in the A&E department where it's already, you know, very busy? So you're going to be thinning the staffing levels. You also mentioned that you wanted to know why people use the My Injuries Unit as a student. I personally used it on a number of occasions because it's a hell of a lot easier to get, you know, to walk in and get something minor seen than faff around getting a GP appointment, which can take, you know, weeks. No, not that I've got anything against the University Health Service. I think it's brilliant. It's just, you know, it's very difficult to get an appointment, especially. I'm also a medical student in my final year. I'm pretty much working, you know, full days now in preparation for F1 in August. And, you know, I can't afford to take time out of my schedule to, you know, miss on a Wednesday without getting in trouble from one of the seniors. And, you know, you've focused us about being students. may I remind you that this area is not just, you know, a student population. You have a big elderly population as well, who, you know, would struggle to drive to the North in general. You know, I know where I'm from. It's a very rural area. People are very dependent on, you know, public transport, and a lot of people drive when they really shouldn't. You know, do you feel that this will disadvantage elderly people as well, you know, to get to the North in general as opposed to just walking up the road to the Hallamshire State? Thank you.
Thank you. Some good questions. Would either of you like to have a go at some of those?
Yeah, so I'm St. John Lindsay. I'm a GP in the New Sheffield for... Sorry, is it better if I'm... Is that a bit better? So I'm St. John Lindsay, GP, been living in Sheffield for about 25 years now, I think, something like that. So I'm on the Clinical Commission Committee. I'm the Clinical Director for Urgent Care.
I'm Anthony Gore. I'm also a GP in the city. I've also been here a very long time. I'm louder than St. John. My practice is in the south of the city, in Woodseats. So obviously, you know, my patient group that I serve as a GP is affected by this as well. St. John's area of responsibility at CCG is about urgent care, and mine is around the other aspects of care outside of hospital, about general practice and community services. So the stuff about improving access in general practice is within my area.
So I'm just thinking about how to answer the questions, and I'm sort of thinking there's technical questions in there and then there's sort of system questions. Is that a reasonable way to try and address it? I've tried to make notes as the questions have come in. If I've missed something, then just at the end say, no, that's not the question, if I've forgotten to do that. So, you know, there's technical questions about jobs and where's it going to be and that sort of thing. And then the more system question from the guy from Sabre NHS about, which was really a sort of about how the system is working, etc. If I could pick up the system question first, if that's, that's okay. I'm certainly not going to disagree with you about the financial pressure that the NHS has been under. And I think, for me, it's really how do we spend the money we have as wisely as we can. I'm not here to say that we don't need more money. I'm here to say that the money that we are given, how do we spend it as wisely as possible? And I think whether you call it a cut really depends on how you define what a cut is, whether it's a cut in service or a cut in money. So I think for my mind, cut is more about money. But other people say it's about service, and that's a perfectly reasonable approach. And, you know, I just have to agree to disagree with that. So if I sort of wind back, for me it's about whether we try and patch up the NHS or whether we're trying to repair it. That's for me, gets to the heart of what the consultation's about. So if we went, and you know, this will be history that you know, but if we go back 10 years or so under the previous Labour government, really it was that the NHS can't cope, and we need to introduce, it needs to be patched up, and we need to introduce the private sector to patch up the NHS, because only the private sector can bring efficiencies, etc. And that obviously has gone through the Cameron government. There was no problem with them for that. And if you excuse this analogy, so I do a lot of cycling, and this will depend on how long you've been in Sheffield, but the Sheffield roads used to be absolutely terrible for cyclists. They were very, very, very bumpy. And they were bumpy because they were patched up all the time. And then a few years ago, Sheffield started to relay the roads, and, you know, the sort of Tour de France was one of the things you noticed. And I remember going along, and I suddenly hit one of these relay roads. My bike went to sleep. It was absolutely wonderful and smooth. And I just thought, that's it. We've got to stop patching things up and start relaying the road. And that, for me, was part of the thing behind the consultation. So the way this operates in urgent primary care in the city, and I'm going to separate illness from injury. I think that's come out very loud and clear through the consultation. So I think your question about is it a genuine consultation when there's not enough difference in there, we've certainly had a lot of feedback which has been the equivalent of none of the above, because people would say they want to keep the minor injuries unit or they want to keep the walking centre. And so we've seen that, and the comments have been quite clear about that. And we've certainly taken note of that. But if I can separate illness and injury, so I'm an urban GP, you know, I work in a city, so I don't do injuries. Okay, I do illness. So there are 82 practices that are doing illness in the city. And they're funded to do that. The GPs are funded to do that. It's the most core thing that we do, is we see people are ill or believe themselves to be ill. But we're also, in Sheffield, we are paying a private company to do the walk-in centre, to provide minor illness. And I'm not knocking them. I mean, my job, I need to be really politically neutral, and I need to be really careful. I think the walk-in centre is good. You may hear bad stuff about them. You probably don't hear a lot of the good stuff. They're always helpful. They help with bank holidays. They are good. And the good people that work there. But we're funding it twice. So we're funding money into the private sector to treat minor illness in this city. And we're funding the GPs to treat minor illness in this city. So part of this consultation for me is, would we be better stopping that patch and actually making primary care more robust, in a sense relaying the roads, to go back to my sort of analogy. And people say, you can't get see a GP. Do we give up on that? Do we say, yeah, we give up on the NHS? We need to patch it. We need to keep patching it. Or do we say that money that's going to the private sector, do we bring it back in and relay the roads and actually make primary care more robust? I think the minor injuries argument is different, because, you know, I'm not going to suddenly learn to see minor injuries. It would, you know, if I was working in Cumbria, I would probably do minor injuries as well. But I don't. I just do minor illness. So I hope that helps answer part of the systematic stuff about what we're trying to do in terms of. So I'm not considering it a cut, because I think that's recycling that money. If people want to say it's a cut in service, then I accept that, because it is moving, etc. And it really just depends how you want to define cuts. For me, cut is about whether the money is being taken out of the system. And it's not. It's about recirculating and putting it into primary care. We're doing it through neighbourhoods. And the reason for we're doing that is what we've found is that so GPs are in short supply, nurses are in short supply. So we can't just, you know, it takes a long time to get a GP. They don't grow on trees, and it takes a while to get them. Nurses, we are getting this practice, but in some ways you're robbing Peter to pay Paul for that, because there's a shortage of nurses throughout the NHS. But there are places, people that we can bring into the NHS. So there's pharmacists, there's actually an oversupply of pharmacists in the country. There's mental health workers, there's physios. But individual practices can't give those people jobs because of various reasons, two reasons mainly. One is that they can't offer them in 40 hours or 35 hours. They can say, well, I'd like a pharmacist to come in and help me do the prescriptions. That'd be great. I can give them 90 minutes a day. You know, or, yeah, I'd like a mental health worker. We could have them in Monday and Thursday morning. Well, obviously, you can't offer a job like that. You have to have a much broader job. And what we've found, this is why we're having our neighbourhood approach, is that if we can put those practices into neighbourhoods where they've got sort of five or six practices working together, then we can offer a job plan that they'll like, that is reasonable for people to take. The other issue is about the employment, actually just taking on the employment, the responsibility for employment, that carries risk for the practices. They're reluctant for that. So we've got a city-wide GP federation that take on employment. So that's why we're trying to say we are funding minor illness twice. Let's take that out and put it all into the NHS services in the city so that we can make that robust in order that it can fund it. I have to say, other cities are taking a different approach. You know, other cities are saying, no, we're going to patch, and they're both quite reasonable approaches. You know, I mean, politics aside, some say it's not going to cope, we're going to patch. That's not the way that we've chosen to do it.
Do you want to just reassure them about the staff questions? I think that's quite an important one.
Yeah, so just in terms of the technical ones, I'm sure I haven't written them all down. So we intended to be in front of A&E because that's where you have the most value if people can be quickly diverted from A&E who don't have an accident emergency, don't have, as Tim was describing before, a real emergency, but really have an urgent care need. So the staff who are working in the walk-in centre would expect them to be offered cheapy jobs across we're not anticipating. I mean, you know, we are not in the process of trying to shed people out of jobs in the NHS. We need people in the NHS, and we really, really, you know, you can get a job in the NHS if you've got the skills to offer. So that's not an issue. But I think in terms of what would officially do, we'd want to see it cheapied across.
So there is a process for if the organisation that you work for loses an NHS contract and the equivalent service is picked up by another organisation, there is an employment protection process that their job will get transferred over to the new provider of the service. So again, we're getting very technical, but yes, we would not anticipate that these highly skilled people would lose their jobs. They may well end up working in a different place, but they would still be doing valuable work with the NHS in Sheffield.
Okay. So the question
about where it will be, etc. Do you mean where it will be?
How much
it
will cost?
Oh, see. Well, we'd anticipate it being under the heli. Yeah,
there is a space.
It's built. There's a spell. It's where the GP Collaborative currently is. Is where we anticipate it will be, which is underneath the helipad in front of either side of A&E at the Northern General.
If you remember the main thing we wanted to do is to improve access to GP appointments. So if we are successful in doing that through these proposals, not that many people will need to go to the urgent treatment centre anyway. So that's the first thing to remember. We want to increase the capacity in your local practice. That's the most important bit of this proposal. The second thing, though, is that if people do choose to go to the urgent treatment centre, or if 111 directs them there, we are confident that the facility we've identified is going to be big enough. We think it will be big enough. Another question behind you?
Thanks for reassuring me about the not losing their jobs at the mine injuries unit, but you didn't answer the other question.
I know, I'm sure I've missed one. Yeah.
No, it's okay, just to ask. You know, as I said about the one at the Northern, who's actually going to be staffing that? Will it be current staff based in the A&E, or will it be people from the minor injuries unit? I mean,
but the minor injuries unit staff it's a nurse-led service. Those nurses are employed by Sheffield Teaching Hospitals, so they effectively rotate there out to the emergency department. They're already employed by A&E effectively. In that sense, if there was going to be an increase in minor injuries use at the Northern General site, the workforce is ready-made. They would merely not work some days of their working week at the minor injuries unit. They'd work at the Northern General site all the time.
You wouldn't think the way the A&E department
worked. No.
Well, it would effectively be a neighbouring. The UTC and the emergency department would sit side by side, and clearly there would be some staff you'd imagine that would be working on minor injuries within the urgent treatment centre setup that previously worked on minor injuries within the emergency department setup. So there is a subtle shift there. The staff would follow the volume, if you like.
Go on.
I was going to take questions from this side, two questions from this side, and then Sue, if you want to take that question over there, does that work?
Hiya. So I'm Flo, and I work at the Students' Union to represent the voice of over 4,000 students here that play sport. And this was a massive concern for many of these students. And we sent out a survey, and over 200 students responded from both UniOff and Hallam, saying that They were really concerned with the removal of the minor injuries unit. And as you touched on earlier, travel was a really big issue. Majority of students don't have cars, they don't drive. And especially when a lot of these injuries are happening, if you've got matches on Saturdays and Sundays, then obviously transport is a massive factor. So I just wanted to know what work you guys are doing kind of locally to work new bus routes and increasing things like that. And also lots of students said that they feared that they wouldn't actually seek help after having injuries, and this might lead to long-term injuries impacting them, not just in their sports careers, but just life in general.
Should we take a couple of others?
We certainly haven't. We obviously haven't modelled as part of this whole thing where existing transport routes and bus routes and travel times are. There's an awful lot of detail that work's been done. In terms of what's been explored in terms of special transportation or anything like that, obviously that's a detailed thing that would be worked up in the next stage beyond the public consultation. Though I am aware that the university is going to be changing where it plays its sports, isn't it? Because they're building on some of the pitches, and some of the sport that currently goes on will be going on in a different part of the city, down in the south of the city, in my patch. So,
yeah. The only loss will actually be one regional pitch.
Right.
It is hockey that will be majority moving to near Graves Park, to Norton Plainfields.
Right.
However, the main injuries that came up in the survey, such as American football and lacrosse, these will remain back at Goodwin when the building work is finished. So majority of matches and the Hallam ones won't be changing as well, so those students will also be needing the service.
Okay. So, I mean, what happens if someone gets injured at Norton currently? I'm genuinely asking. I mean,
it's just to reiterate about, we've had clear feedback about minor injuries unit from very early on in the consultation about the difficulty that would cause people. I think it was certainly before we went out to consultation, it was one of the things that we discussed the most internally, was the minor injuries unit, and whether the system benefits of putting it all in one place outweigh the convenience benefits. And then we've had a lot of feedback that would say that that's not the case, all right, that the convenience benefits or the disadvantages of moving it to one site are too great to justify the, to say, yeah, we can recommend the system benefits. Does that make sense? All I can say is we've definitely heard that, and that needs to go into the decision-making process. I don't want to, I can't say more than that. We've definitely heard that. And from the Student Health Service, that was their strong concern.
Just before we take another question, we've done a little bit of work on this, just to add to what my colleagues have already said. Number one, obviously we're hearing about this, and we've got to think about this. The second thing is, in the minor injuries unit, about 33% of attendances were people between the ages of 15 and 29. So that's clearly, that covers students. But we also know that about 70% of people who attend the minor injuries unit travel to the unit by private transport rather than public transport or walking. Still, it's an issue, isn't it? There's still 30% of people are not accessing the service that way. But we know from the figures already at the minor injuries unit that is the fact. What I would like us to be really careful about when we moving to a solution here is that we need to think about people who don't have transport, people who have difficulty negotiating public transport, like people with mental health conditions and so on and so on. So we have to be really quite careful about what solution we do go to. But currently, that's the way the minor injuries unit is used. That's just a little bit of preliminary fact-finding, if you like, that we know about the minor injuries unit. But that feedback is, like I said on the slides earlier, that we've been hearing about that, so that's an important thing. Let's take another question. Thank you.
Hiya, my name's David. I'm a medical student. I was just wondering, you say you want to expand capacity in GP practices. How many extra appointments or extra spaces do you anticipate this will create in practices around Sheffield, and you say that it's going to be done by a triage system. I've been placed in a GP practice where they use a triage system, and it worked quite well because the person doing the triage was a GP.
Yeah.
Whereas you hear a lot of stories about NHS 111 centres being triaged by a non-GP or by a layperson who fires an algorithm which works much less well. I was just wondering who would actually be doing the triage in these cases.
Point well made, very well made. Okay. Anthony?
Great question. It's worth pointing out, general practice is changing anyway. So lots of practices run innovative and different systems. If I've got my sort of crosshairs on anyone, it's that practice that you ring and they say, oh no, we can't give you an appointment for 2 weeks. Okay, I think that has to end. I'm very clear on that. You have to be able to have a reactive service that meets the needs of your patients, and you also that needs service needs to be so responsive that it doesn't create unmet need. We mentioned before about people who are unwell, find it difficult to access, and then sit on their illness and get worse. Okay, that's unacceptable. So good access is vital. We know that some practices do it very well. It's actually a small minority of practices that do it badly. We know this. The hope is that we can drive up standards in general practice and improve funding into general practice. And the third thing is the neighbourhood working. And the neighbourhood working is going to be particularly useful in, as St John described, in the way we deploy extra or new staff and different types of worker into the workforce. But the vast majority of people will still be seen in their own general practice because they are now. And the what working in a neighbourhood will do will allow flexibility. It will allow there to be a pharmacist and a mental health worker and a physio available for to assess people if that's what they need. And it will free up a GP and advanced nurse practitioner time to improve the access and also to allow those people to do other things. So all of that's important. The other part of your question was about 111 and about triage. Yeah, I'm not necessarily going to tell each practice and each neighbourhood what their system should be. Where I work as a GP, a telephone triage system works very well because we have nearly everybody has a telephone and really good access and all that kind of stuff. And we know that because we get very few walk-ins. Yeah. Person who turns up at the desk poorly, that's a kind of one a fortnight sort of thing. Okay, in other parts of the city, very different socioeconomics, large proportions of the population with English as a second language, the behaviours are very different, the use of mobile telephones is very different, and what you get is huge numbers of people walking into surgeries expecting to be seen. So telephone triage alone wouldn't solve that surgery or that neighbourhood's problems. So the ask of us as commissioning body of practices will be about the standard of access. It won't necessarily be that we're going to mandate a triage system or anything like that. What we will be asking for is a certain level of access and a certain quality of service, and there are ways of commissioning that over and above core general practice.
Did specifically ask about capacity and extra capacity. So for the reasons Anthony's sort of explained, you can't actually do that because different practices work very differently. Sometimes because of the way the partners want to practice, sometimes it's the way that the population prefers to present. You know, it's both and that's going on there. What I can say is that the walk-in centre, in hours, it would be the equivalent of half a patient a day per practice. Attends the walk-in centre. So in hours, while practices are open, there's 11,000 patients. There's 60,000 patients a year. Most of those are out of hours. So we have to make sure that the out-of-hours capacity is there, which obviously we've done a lot over the last few years. We've got the four hubs in people's localities and different parts of the city to take up the urgent care there. And the collaborative, the out-of-hours collaborative will point people there. In hours, it's been of half a patient per practice. Day, and as I say, they are their patients, they already need to see them. I think there is an issue for some practices where they'd be particularly busy, so obviously the student practices, because there is a relatively high use of the walk-in centre from students. It's interesting, the student practices, the feedback they've given to us is that they're not happy about minor injuries. Minor illnesses, you know, that's fair enough, it's our job to do that. And if I may, I think there's something about vulnerability for me in this. So I think the walk-in service is generally not the best service for students, in turn, not because of the service, but because of the population. So there are various vulnerable groups in the city, so I've put homeless and asylum seekers, and we actually want them to have a regular team. And I'm just aware, I mean, I've never worked, well, I've done locums in a student practice, but never worked there long term. But I actually think, and what I understand is that you have students often come with really relatively minor things because they're handling illness for the first time by themselves without their parents. And then you've got students coming with really major stuff. You know, they're handling their insulin for the first time by themselves. Schizophrenia is starting to present. That's the classic age for schizophrenia to happen. And really, I personally don't think walking services are the best for that. You know, you want them to know their practice team. You want them to have continuity of care. You want them to be seen by a service that you know is responsive to students. So again, for me, I'm really impressed by the way the Student Health Service says, yeah, this is going to cause us a lot of work, but we want to do it. And I really think it's the right thing for students. Although it's inconvenient, and there is inconvenience, and you know, the out-of-hours stuff that I think the medical student was saying about working out of hours, you know, difficult to get in hours, and we have got that, so we've got the hub base at Crooks, which, you know, there's no issue with phones for students, they can ring 111 and get booked in there. But I do think there's a vulnerability issue that we're at risk of missing.
Yeah. Take another question.
I'm a gatecrasher, I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm not a student. My name is Peter Sefton, and I chair the City Centre Residents Association, which is called SCRAG, Sheffield City Centre Residents Action Group. You can look it up, scrag.org. I have great sympathy with your challenge, because I've done this sort of thing many times in the past with public transport, and I know you don't get a good reception when you tell people you're going to change their bus service or their medical service. But I've lived in the City Centre for 13 years. There are 20,000 people live within the Ring Road in Sheffield City Centre. There are three surgeries at the moment, only three surgeries, and you're going to close one of them. There's the Mulberry practice, there's Devonshire Green, and currently there's Rockingham House. So there'll only be two of centres left in the future. You've said on a number of occasions, we're going to put practices closer to where you are. Well, you're not. That's a Donald Trump fake news argument, isn't it? I mean, you can't really tell us that you're going to put services close to where we are. You don't. Sorry?
If you're not a student, mate, can you agree, please?
Well, I want to just go through all this. Our organisation represents 20,000 people living in the city centre, yeah. So it is quite important,
yeah,
actually.
27,000 students at the university.
Well, if you don't want to hear these points of view, you did say we've got till 8 o'clock, so I'm not going to stay that long, I can assure you. I understand your point, but this is the only opportunity I have had to get to one of these consultation exercises. You clearly don't understand the city centre, gentlemen, I'm afraid. And not many people do. Even the city council doesn't understand the city centre. 20,000 people, 60% of them are students, but 40% of them are not students. We hate going to the Northern General Hospital. It's difficult to access, the parking is impossible, the distance is great, the public transport services aren't good from the city centre, and you admit you've not looked at public transport. Before retiring, I ran the public transport, so I know how difficult it is to get buses to Northern General Hospital. Rockingham surgery is very convenient. You don't like funding it, but the city centre surgeries aren't open on bank holidays or at weekends, and you haven't mentioned whether you're going to provide that kind of facility. The staff shortages that you're talking about are incredibly bad. We know that. 35,000 nurses short. But the government took away the training grants, didn't it, in its wisdom? What a ridiculous thing to do that was for nursing. Hallamshire is very convenient. Northern General is a ridiculous option. Now, I've got three questions for you. The first one I might put through a Freedom of Information request, because you won't be able to answer it, I don't think, this evening. And that is, how many patients visit the Rockingham street surgery.
Excuse me. Yeah. Do you mean the one on Broad Lane?
The Broad Lane. Yes. Yeah. We call it Rockingham because it's really. Yeah. All right. Rockingham Broad Lane. How many patients' visits take place at that location on an annual basis? How many patient visits take place to the Devonshire Green surgery on an annual basis? And how many take place to the Mulberry practice on an annual basis? As I say, that might be better as a freedom of information question. My next question will be, will the two surgeries that remain be open at weekends and bank holidays? And the third question is, we need a 24/7, 365 days a year service available for the city centre. You are not providing one from the information you've given us so far.
So, so I suppose there's a couple of points I'd like to make, and then I know Anthony wants to make a couple of points. I think what we'd like to do is offer the residents in the city centre what the residents in the rest of Sheffield get, which is that they'll have local practices, but the rest of Sheffield doesn't get 365 day 24/7 walking services in
the,
in there.
It's not the same though, is it? You've not got 20,000 people living within our radius.
Yeah, I don't think that's a reason in itself to provide to be able to provide that service, and you know, just practicalities in terms of workforce. It wouldn't be practical. I think you make a point though that I really agree with, which is about the changing area of population in the city. I don't think it's to do with this consultation, because that's really about the moving of the walk-in centre. You know, I can think of Kelham Island, you know, and I look at Kelham Island and think, they're going to need a primary school, they're going to need to have a doctor's surgery, etc. So I think there is a really valid sort of city challenge, if I can put it that way, to how we restructure those services that communities require. So it seems to me that, that what's happened with changing population where people live, and obviously the move into the city centre, it is quite new. You know, that's happened over the last 10, 15 years.
It's growing. It's
I think that's a really valid point. So though I would challenge about the need for a walk-in centre, I'm absolutely not challenging about the need for correctly planned public services for the changing way that our population in this city is now resides. That's to me is what you're getting at. That's what the underlying frustration is. And I have to say I agree with you. I think that is a real challenge to the city. I don't think it's part of this consultation. And I can understand why your frustration boils over, because this is at least the thing that you're using at the moment. I think that's a good challenge. It's one that the city needs to take hold of, definitely. You know, and as I say, I think for me, we need a library, we're going to need, we need primary schools, we need, I'm basically agreeing with your underlying point. I think that's completely valid.
And I suppose I have a technical answer, which is that the CCG is very, very mindful of the special circumstances of the city centre general practices. The walk-in centre in the corner of Rockingham and Broad Lane is a separate issue, as St John's outlined. Those city centre proper general practices are special cases. They have unique populations, including the vulnerable populations that St John's alluded to, and because the population skews towards a younger population, they have an often a more deprived population. You get more much higher rates of mental health problems, and so on and so on. So those practices have different and unique pressures compared to practice in the suburbs. There is work going on to try and identify ways of capital investment to help the facilities for those practices. There is a city centre neighbourhood of practices. We mentioned our 16 neighbourhoods. So those practices are starting to look at how they can help each other and work together, and how they address their needs and the specific issues that their population has will be the way forward, to make sure that the populations that they serve have got good access going forward. But as I said, the population where I work don't have a walk-in centre within walking distance, and where you work, they don't have a walk-in centre within walking distance. So it isn't about trying to remove something from the city centre population. They have specific issues that need to be addressed through core general practice, and we'll make sure that they are.
Okay, thank you. Take another question, please.
Hi, I'm from sport, so generally it's focused around minor injuries and also major injuries. So you said at the start that you're not going to cut anything to do with emergency treatment. Does that mean you're not changing it at all, or is there going to be funds put forward to improving like the emergency services? So, for example, one of my players, he dislocated his knee at training about 9 o'clock. And he was waiting on the field until 1 a.m. for an ambulance, and he couldn't be moved. We've had games where, again, someone's dislocated their knee and had to lie on the side of a field, again, for about two and a half hours to be treated. I understand it's not a major incident, and ambulances get re-diverted as and when, but there was last year an issue in the NFL, one of the players in training, a non-contact injury. I think he dislocated his hip, and if he didn't get surgery within a few hours or something, he would have lost his leg from just some minor thing. So from lying on the side of a field from a non-contact injury could have had disastrous consequences. So that, I guess that's my first question. Is anything going to be improved there in terms of ambulances? Secondly, if you're moving everything to basically where A&E is, so it's in theory more streamlined, if I got what you said correctly, will that mean the process of going through A&E and minor injuries will be sped up? So like, I've personally only been to A&E once, and minor injuries many more times than that. But when I got to A&E, I was told it would be about a five-hour wait. If I knew that before I went, I probably wouldn't have gone. And back home in London where I live, if I went to the walk-in centre and then got sent on to minor injuries, it would be a two-hour wait at the walk-in centre and then a further two-hour wait at A&E. That's in London, so not necessarily relevant, but if I'm at minor injuries and then get referred on to A&E, will that speed up the whole process in total, and also people from A&E being forwarded into minor injuries? So will it streamline everything, or will it just make everything slower?
Shall I have a go at that? Yeah. So this process, this consultation isn't really about the major emergencies, some of those that you were talking about actually. But I think that some of that experience isn't really acceptable, and it might be worth, if you haven't already, if you could let us know at the CCG about some of those incidents, because they sound significant. We commission the ambulance service. We don't run it, of course, but we do commission the ambulance service. This is separate from today's consultation, but it might be worth you feeding that up, feeding that back to the CCG. One thing, actually, that it is indirectly related, of course, because these things are, we conveniently say this is urgent care, that's an emergency. But, you know, if we deal with urgent things better, then we should be able to deal with, we shouldn't have people in the emergency department, for example, with non-emergency conditions. So if you do end up having to go to the A&E department with a genuine emergency, if we're dealing with the urgent problems better through our proposals that we're talking about tonight, then the A&E department should run more smoothly. Part of the reason for doing what we're doing is because the A&E departments are so stretched, and some of the people who are turning up, because they're often out of desperation, they don't know where to go. It's not really their fault most of the time. They're turning up with things which could be treated perfectly adequately in other settings, but of course that generates a longer waiting time for everybody, because they're dealing with things that perhaps could be dealt with somewhere else. So I don't know if that kind of indirectly answers your question, but the genuine emergencies are outside the scope of this consultation, really, for tonight. Should we take another question? Who have we got? Should we take one from the back, and then we'll come back down to the front here?
Hello. You'll have to forgive me for not being a student, but I am part of the university, and I did receive an email inviting me to attend this evening. Okay. Recently, I've spent several mornings on the moor or outside the city hall, asking people if they would like to sign a petition. This is specifically to keep the minor injuries unit open. We didn't put the two together. And I suppose I've watched the signatures of more than 100 people, and there was only one person who refused to sign. Now, of course, they're self-selected, but they didn't know until they stopped to talk to me whether exactly what it was that I was going to offer them to do. And I had a few longer conversations with some people other than them saying, yes, I'll sign. And one of them, or more than one of them, was about a genuine consultation. And I'm afraid there is enormous scepticism that you may well have made your decision, and that regardless of the responses that you get at the end of the consultation, that you are going to close those two facilities. Because I did show some of them your survey form, and they said, but there isn't, that's not a choice. Apart from the children's aspect, for adults, there's no choice in your document. So I would like you to give a real definitive answer. If you find that most people want to keep the status quo over those two facilities, would you be willing to keep one or both of them open? And can I just... So I would really like a straight answer. Yeah. Oh, and I'll add to that.
That's a shame.
I did discover that you have got...
Sorry, carry on. Sorry.
You've got a private company to assess the responses. I just wonder what the terms of reference for that private company are.
Yeah.
But just one other thing. I've been to several CCG meetings, and I do appreciate the fact that, you know, you're going out and meeting people, having been shoved into meeting more people, I think. But I appreciate that. But I have never heard a direct answer. How will the parking problem be resolved if this goes ahead at the Northern General? So please, two direct answers.
Yeah. Okay. Can I make a couple of remarks? Can I just make a couple of remarks, and I think my colleagues would like to try and address some of this. I think the first thing about the petition is we have received that petition. We're grateful for people taking time to listen to the argument on the street and sign petitions, and I think this is a good thing personally. I want people to engage with this process and tell us what they think, so that is a good thing in my opinion. The second thing about the nature of the consultation, I do get people's scepticism. People are sceptical. I want you to know it's a genuine consultation. It really is genuinely a consultation. Partly because it's genuinely a consultation, how can I give a definitive answer before the answers have been looked at? I can't do that.
Would you be willing to keep one of them open or both?
Well, if people say that in sufficient numbers, we will certainly have to consider that. So we'll have to see when we've got all the responses back. I was telling you about the many questionnaires that people have filled in detail and the other responses online. The second thing about about having an independent company look at this, people who do this on a regular basis rather than us attempting to do it, is that people will suspect that if we've made the proposals and then we assess the feedback that we've had through the consultation, that we'll just make our own mind up and just railroad through our own ideas and take no notice. We have no intention of doing that. We want you to know that this analysis will be done independently, and then when that has been done properly and thoroughly by people who know how to do it properly and thoroughly, then we will be considering what our options are at that point. So I think we do need that professional help, and it ought really, I would hope, it would reassure you that we are not going to indulge in that kind of behaviour. We're trying to be as transparent and open, and also as thorough as possible. And the last thing to say is that we are advised that that is usually the best way of doing this. From the point of view of the lawyers, they think is that this is a good way of doing this process. So that's just a few remarks about some of those points, all of which I think are very valid points actually. Did either of my colleagues want to add to that?
It was the same, and I was saying it's a shame just because it's we can't do that at a public meeting. We can't give you the sort of guarantee you want to do. We have to go through a process of a public consultation. We've had very clear feedback about the minor injuries. I said, whether you've just come in. I did say earlier on that it was something we had a lot of internal discussion about, the minor injuries unit, and whether the convenience factor outweighed the advantage to the system factor. It's always very difficult when people say, oh, trust us and all that. It just doesn't work. But we have to go through the full process. If we break that process, then we try to change services, we're very vulnerable then to a legal challenge if we want to move services around. So we have to go through a full process. So much as it'd be lovely to be able to say to an audience, oh, that's definitely going to happen, that's just incorrect. You have to set out the options. We've definitely had feedback about minor injuries. We've definitely had feedback about the sort of none of the above. So there's people who haven't ticked anything and they've written stuff, and we realise what they're saying when they do that. We're saying it's a genuine consultation. We have to complete the consultation, and then we have to get that looked at. Say if we just looked at it, people wouldn't trust us, so we'd have to let somebody else have a look at it, as Tim's describing. And then we have to go through about how we're going to make the final decision. But we have to go through the full process. So, apologies that we can't get the answer tonight, but we can't.
There was a specific point about seeking reassurance about what we'd ask that company to do. Because obviously, if we had asked that company to come up with a particular result, then obviously that we've got some experts on FOIs in the room, that will come out. So it is an absolutely transparent process where we're asking for their proper analysis on what's been fed back to them, and we will receive what their analysis is, and that will then inform the commissioning process and how we make a final decision. And as Sinjin said, we can't preempt that.
Thank you. Can we take another question? Jen? Oh, sorry, the parking question.
Yeah, I hope I explained why we couldn't answer the other questions. No, I think parking's valid. I think that's something that's is a worry. I mean, when you think, that you've asked an awful lot of very good, very pertinent questions. I think parking's a real worry. I think for the minor illness, most people should find it easier because they shouldn't be having to find in town, because they should be parking at their local practice or a neighbouring practice. So for minor illness, that should be easier. And then they'll be going to a locality hub between 6 and 10. So that's, again, not at the hospital for minor illness. So the only time that they would, if there was an urgent treatment centre at the hospital that was doing the stuff overnight from 10 till 8, then obviously parking is easy then. It's really difficult during the day.
Let's take another question.
For minor illness, minor injuries, then your question remains a good challenge about parking.
Hi. So I've got about 5 short questions. And the first one I'd like to start off on, I'd like to ask about this consultation taking off from where the woman at the back was talking about. So I kind of believe you that you haven't just told the private company what to decide, but presumably what they're going to be doing is analysing the forms which you've been sending out to people. That's probably the main part of their role, right? Well, if the only sort of options that the forms give you are kind of 3 flavours of we're going to close your minor injuries unit, then the analysis is going to come out as you're going to close the minor injuries unit. So you've not told them, fine, whatever. But
sorry, I'll let you go through your 5, or do you want me to answer?
You can answer that one first.
I've just said we've definitely heard the none of the above thing, and so so we get weekly feedback about what's happening, and it's been very clear to us that some people are making it very clear that it's a none of the above options, and they are there, so they're ticking nothing and then they're writing underneath, or they tick something that then doesn't tally with their comments.
The qualitative stuff gets analysed and sort of themed as well in their analysis.
And we'd be pretty sure the private company should pick that up, to be honest.
Yeah.
It is straightforward.
They're not only looking at these questionnaires, they'll look at everything we've got, including your feedback here tonight, So it's everything. And they'll need a range of techniques to try and make sense of it all, right, which is why it is quite a technical thing to do.
I used to work somewhere where I used to do this qualitative and quantitative analysis on platforms.
That's right.
But so two things about that. The first is that when you work doing that, you downgrade the qualitative feedback in comments. You upgrade the quantitative stuff. So if someone's just ticked a box, that counts more than somebody not ticking it. So just as a matter of practice doing the job, that's how you do it.
Okay, that's
second
helpful.
Second thing is, whilst they might have lots of feedback that you may have garnered from all sorts of places, will you give them the 10,000 signatures we've collected from the campaign? If you will, then presumably that's a none of the above. I'd like you to give them the signatures. I guess those are just some points. A few other questions. So, St. John, you mentioned earlier that there's two ways of talking about cuts. One is a cut in funding, the other is a cut in services. They're not mutually exclusive. Both can do massive damage. You can just move money around in such a way that people in certain areas, certain geographical areas, are massively deprived of services that they really require, and that's the feedback you're hearing. Right? Fine, it's not a cut in money. Maybe. I mean, I'm not entirely sure about that, actually. But granted that it's not a cut in money, it's a cut in the service people need, and that's what you're hearing. And I think that's the major thing. And to go back to your cycling sort of roads analogy earlier, sort of either patching up the roads or kind of relaying them. It sounds like you're trying to relay them somewhere else, trying to move the roads, right? You move the road somewhere else, not very much use to the people who used to be able to use them.
Yeah.
Second point is just that, it's actually something that you said.
Can I just ask you previous points? Are you talking about both illness and injury, or are you just talking about injury?
Yeah, I mean, the services people are currently using.
Yeah, okay.
Second thing is something you said yourself, perhaps students aren't the right demographic to be using the walk-in centre. That's something you said. Perhaps the walk-in centre should be around for more vulnerable people, perhaps people who are homeless. Sheffield's recently, in the last couple of years, because of the refugee crisis, home to many more refugees now than it used to be, and presumably it's just the walk-in centre that's going to be their first port of call if they've not got homes, proper visas, passports, some of those sorts of things which kind of come with fleeing war-torn countries. So they're going to need a walk-in centre. It's somewhere in the centre of city, and I think that should be kind of really quite high up on the thinking about this. And then finally, I guess it's a question about the GP situation. So you say that the majority of what you want to do is try and make it more efficient in such a way that actually people can go to their GPs more easily. And a lot of the strain that gets put on the services that you're planning to close will instead go to GPs.
Yep.
So two things about that. First is, you've also sort of mentioned that lots of people don't use their GPs because they can't get appointments. So there's already a sort of a strain on the GPs in terms of time, in terms of GPs often starting to farming out their time to private clients. And you actually began this whole presentation by pointing out that there are way fewer GPs projected to be around in the near future. Applications are dropping, they don't grow on trees, and lots are leaving the profession.
Yeah.
So you're planning for the long term to push services that people are using in the short term onto a service which won't be as structurally stable as it maybe currently is.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to hear about that from GP tension.
I think it goes back to the system point I tried to make at the beginning. I think different cities are doing different things. So some cities are saying, it's under too much strain. We're going to carry on outsourcing to the private sector, and we're going to carry on putting money into the private sector to patch up what GPs can't do. And we've just decided to say, actually, and there's various reasons for doing that. So we haven't talked about the frail elderly. So one of the big challenges to the country is about how do we look after a more frail elderly population. And it's really important for them to be looked after in the community rather than in hospital, if at all possible. And if they do need to go in hospital, to come out as quickly as possible. And to do that, we've got to make community services as robust as possible. And that is delivered through practices and neighbourhoods. I think it is valid to say, the NHS can't cope, we need to patch it with private money. We're putting money into the private sector to do it because only they're efficient enough. I think some people are saying that. As a city, what we're saying is, okay, well, let's try and make it robust again. Let's make it robust by not patching it up. And, you know, which is why I was asking you to talk about illness or injury, because obviously that argument doesn't apply to injury because there aren't 82 other people doing injury, but it does apply to illness. And that's really a question for all of you. It's a question for Sabre NHS, whether they want to say, yeah, put it into the private sector because GP can't do it, or no, put it back, bring it back into NHS funding. So some cities are doing it differently to us. We just wanted to bring it back in. I think with the asylum seekers and the new arrivals, I've been misunderstood. I think I've not been clear. What I was trying to say was that I want to give them a better offer than just an ad hoc service. I want them to be knitted into a local practice. That was what the point I was trying to make. I'm sorry.
So which services are those?
Well, practices.
GPs.
Yeah. So I think it's about saying, getting into local practicing, that's what we need to do rather than ad hoc services. And some cities are doing different things.
You made a very good point about GP shortages, and in Tim's presentation he made the point that actually Sheffield has up to this point been pretty protected. We haven't had large numbers of GP vacancies, far from it. Up until very recently, the Sheffield VTS GP training scheme was at full numbers, and it was one of the last schemes in the country to have that up until very recently. So Sheffield, as an attractive place to live and work, is very lucky in that regard. What it's meant, though, is that if you look at other places in the country, they have changed general practice more than Sheffield has. So they have already done a lot more sort of neighbourhood sort of networks of practices, and they've changed the skill mix of the practice workforce a lot already. In lots of places in the country, you wouldn't expect to see a GP with a sore throat or a sore shoulder, because that's not what the system is in that practice. And so Sheffield still has a very much GP-led primary care workforce. Now, that's not bad or wrong or anything, but if there are reducing numbers of GPs over the next decade, let's say, then those systems in the practices will be what changes, and the type of skill mix of the workforce will be what changes. And that's where practices working together to be resilient in neighbourhoods becomes very helpful. And the other thing I mentioned about the majority of practices have really good access, and there's only a few that kind of let the team down. It isn't necessarily true that the practices that have the best access are the ones with the largest number of GPs. It's about good systems rather than, you know, being ridiculously overstaffed or anything like that. And efficient systems for dealing with demand and dealing with appointments and all of that kind of stuff makes a massive difference. So it will be a changing thing gradually over time. We're not suddenly going to lose half our GP workforce tomorrow. It will be that over the years to come, it may shift that as a proportion, the number of GPs go down, the number of other types of people in the workforce will go up, but it won't be a sudden big bang overnight.
I'm mindful of time. We've got about half an hour left. Some people have asked five questions, some people have asked more, and other people haven't asked any yet. So I'm quite keen that if we can, I'd like to hear some other voices. And what I think we should try and do, gents, is try and make relatively short answers so that we can get as many questions in as possible. I think we've had an opportunity to discuss some things in depth. Now I want to make sure we get the breadth. So if we could try and hear a few new voices, perhaps this gent at the front.
Yep, so we've got a couple.
Yeah, should we do that?
So should we get several at once?
Should we take two or three?
Yeah.
And we'll try and be quick in our answers as well.
Hi, my name's Oliver. I'm a final year medical student. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for coming along and in having us part of the consultation process. I think it's good to have that. Just a bit of clarification I want on the hubs. I don't know much about the hubs, but I totally see what you're saying about having GPs look after the minor illness and cover as much illness as they can, and having out of hours GP service do all their illness stuff. And then any major emergency stuff goes to the hospital. I think that makes sense. I'm just wondering, with the minor injuries stuff, whether that could be integrated with the hubs at all, whether you could have hand-in-hand minor injuries with out-of-hours GP surgeries for the minor illnesses, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take another one and we'll come back on that one. Thank you. That's good.
So just had to clarify what you said about accessing the services. You said you call your GP. When I call my GP, often they tell me all the telephone callbacks have gone for the day. I call at 9 a.m. This is half an hour after the practice has opened. I don't understand how I can't even access a triage appointment, never mind access appointments.
Yeah.
So I go to Broad Lane, I go and sit there in Broad Lane for 2 hours, 3 hours at a time, because the only way, I have diabetes, I'd rather go to my local GP. I don't want to go and sit with somebody who doesn't know my care, but I end up having to go and sit with someone who doesn't know my care because I can't even get any care from a triage.
Okay. Should we take one more? Have you got another one on this side?
Mine sort of linked to the first one as well about the minor injuries unit. And one of my main concerns is the impact that this will have on A&E. There's already the minor injuries unit at the Northern, and whether this will be expanded, whether there'll be more staff there, or whether the current juniors that are staffing A&E will just be expected to manage the increasing demand. I don't really understand how that will work. And then just generally, what impact do you think this will have on A&E?
Yeah.
What we can do about that.
Can I take the first one? Would that be all right? Or could the hubs do minor injuries? They probably could do a lot of them, because many of them are sprains and muscle tears and things like that. They probably could do those. There might just be a few minor injuries where you might decide you do want an X-ray or something. But that isn't actually the majority of minor injuries. So some practices deal with those things already. The hubs probably could deal with quite a few of those things. So I think the hubs certainly would be about minor illness, as St John was saying, but I think they could do some of the minor injuries, if I can put it like that. Perhaps some very minor burns, some very minor lacerations that could be dealt with in that way. Does somebody want to talk about the triage, the GPs who don't do triage?
Essentially, if you as a patient with what you described there, if it was me, yeah? Essentially, you didn't get your needs met, did you?
No.
So, by definition, that has to be unacceptable. So, as I said earlier on, that's exactly what we're about in the general practice bit of this. Yeah, with a lot of talk about big, exciting things like UTCs and all of that. But actually, as a system, we get the biggest improvement in urgent care access by changing your experience there, yeah? And actually, the more people we get going to practices where they've got excellent access, where they do get clinically triaged, they can get seen if it's appropriate, and they get seen by the appropriate professional. It doesn't always have to be a GP. The system is very efficient, yeah? If we can get to that point over the next few years, then fewer people will need to go to the evening satellite hubs. Fewer people will need to go to the urgent treatment centre. So the geographic nature of it being at the Northern General will become less of an issue for a very large number of people. So the solution to this is in general practice, and more investment in general practice goes further, because an extra nurse or an extra GP or a physiotherapy or a pharmacist working in general practice can do more than just urgent care. They're also contributing to the care of the frail elderly and to good medicines management and to long-term conditions care. And so it is a better, more efficient place for our resource to go. And that's what a lot of this is about, as well as improving the urgent care access. I'm not saying, I very clearly said before, the triage would not be the answer for every practice in every neighbourhood, but it's a helpful thing in a lot of cases, because it allows you to deal with things over the telephone that don't need seeing face to face. But if a system is limited, you're limiting your access, so that a patient has to ring by a certain time to be seen, or well, it's just not a very complete access to service, is it? So what we have to do is ensure that we encourage, incentivise and cajole practices to improve their standards of access. And I don't want to get into the technicalities of how we encourage and commission all of that, but actually we can do that. We can start to increase quality standards and access standards in general practice. And
we have to improve that.
We're not defending what's happened.
I don't think the service you've had is not really acceptable, and we have to improve that. I just think so. Sinjin, do you want to have a go at the MIU impact on A&E?
In terms of staff, I don't think moving the MIU would increase the number of minor injuries. I think they'll obviously stay the same. And so the staff that were dealing with the minor injuries at the Hallamshire would then be based at the Northern. So I'd expect them to be able to handle the same number of minor injuries rather than it suddenly overrunning A&E, because we've got to say, we just have more staff there. That's helpful. So they already work for Northern General. It's the same nurses that rotate out, so they'd just be always based at the Northern General. Yeah.
Okay, let's see if we can take some more. We've got another 25 minutes.
Hello, yes. So I'm quite interested in that figure used before, which was 70% of patients at the minor injuries units use private transport.
Yeah.
So I'm quite interested to find out how you actually came to that figure and what your definition of private transport is. But also, I think that figure also implies that a third of people using that centre didn't come with private transport, they came with public transport, which I think is still a significant minority and wouldn't be a justification for closing down the minor injuries unit, and shows that travel is still a significant problem when it comes to moving all these services to the Northern General Hospital.
Yep.
Can
you just say a couple more, yes, please?
Hello, I'm a little bit older than some of the people here, so I've accessed the services in the city quite a bit longer. Just a few observations, if I can. You talked about clarity at the beginning. I'm a member of staff here at the university, but I also work in Sheffield Teaching Hospitals. It's strange that we haven't heard anything about this consultation. No one that I worked with had heard about it either. So I don't think it's been as widely advertised as you think it might have been. Going on to the GP access, you say you can't tell how other practices operate their services, but yet you want to close down what essentially is a backup, like the young man here. My surgery, you can't get appointments after 4:30. You usually have to wait anything between 3 and 4 weeks and go through a receptionist to triage. This is why people from my area do use Broad Lane, because it's the only way you can get to see someone often. If you have something major and you need to go to the Northern General, on our side of town it can take anything up to an hour and a quarter to get there. This is the geography of this city and its transport system has to be seriously considered, that people can't access facilities over at the Northern General. And again, to reiterate what's already been said, the parking over there is just a joke. You can't park until after 10 o'clock, not 8 o'clock at night, through the middle of the night. But you go over there with an injured person, someone who's sick. You don't want to be on the road for over an hour in a car. You need to be able to get somewhere locally, or at least minor injuries is not so far to travel when someone's ill.
Thank you. And another question?
Mine's a similar point about clarity. You talked about how people get confused about which service they should be using. How do you propose, if these new changes come in, you ensure everyone is aware of it? Personally, I wasn't aware of these hubs that you're talking about, and I wasn't aware that there was an alternative to the walk-in centre for out-of-hours services. And if people haven't even heard of the consultation, what do you propose you'll do to make sure everyone knows that these new services are coming in?
Okay, so we'll take those three and we'll try and be quick.
70%.
Shall I have a go at the 70%? So, okay, I wasn't involved in the survey, but there was a survey done. We asked people how they got there, and they told us. So I'm not sure what the precise definition was of private transport. And I think your point that still a third of people are not arriving by car is obviously a very significant thing. We can't make a decision about a unit like this simply on that kind of statistic. Clearly we need a lot of richness behind that, and a range of other stats too. Travel, generally, not just that particular stat, but travel has just keeps coming up and up and up and up. And really, this is why we think we would prefer to focus on more investment and more services provided as near to where you live as possible, across the whole of the city, which is why our proposal is the way it is, so that practices can cope better with the demand. People talked again about the demand that practices are facing, and in some cases it sounds like they're not coping, but we know that. Hence our proposal is to make this better. If we have to all rely on getting in a car and travelling for an hour and a half every time we have a minor injury or a minor illness, the city really will grind to a halt, and it will be a poor service in my view. So it's much better that we try and provide services closer to where people live, and if it's an urgent problem that people have, that we do our very best to guarantee this 24-hour access. Do you want to... there are a couple of new points made there, just in the interest of time and hearing everybody's voice. I mean, the travel we keep coming back to. So perhaps something about it not being a wide enough consultation?
We've tried.
We have tried.
We really have tried. It's quite interesting being on... I've never been on this side of a consultation before. It's quite interesting... because you think everybody's heard it because you hear it again every day, and we've really tried for local media with
social media,
advertising, putting things up in surgeries. We really have tried as hard as we can. I'm sort of looking at our
the newspapers have been very kind in giving us column inches, but also people who've opposed what we've said, they've also had column inches.
Yeah.
We've been on Calendar. MP Louise Hague has voiced her opinion about our proposals, and so we've had some debate on the television as well. So there has been a lot going on. I get that it doesn't get to everybody. We did extend the consultation period to try and make it more effective, and I think that has helped, actually. I think we have had a lot of opportunity to speak to people we hadn't so far spoken to. We've also reached out to some minor, some groups you wouldn't normally hear from in this by doing these type of meetings. We've actually had to go to them to hear what they think of our proposals. So we have tried really quite hard to make this as wide as possible. I think if people want to challenge that, then I think that might be an interesting challenge. We've certainly tried our best through this process to make it as wide and as deep as possible, this consultation. I'll just come to the last point that somebody made about confusion about services. When we do come to a decision about this, if it does involve reconfiguring services, we will have to have a huge communications campaign go on about what we've decided and probably also why, and then how people can access services in the city. I'm hoping that it will be as straightforward as the slide said at the beginning of the evening, that you will phone your practice or phone 111, and you will get an appropriate service, not like the service that somebody described a few minutes ago. You'll get a proper service which gets you to the service that you need, and if you've got an urgent need, that you are seen within 24 hours.
Now, I think that's very important. We shouldn't expect members of the public to be experts on how to navigate the health service.
No.
Yeah? There should be very easy single points of access that can say, that sounds like a nasty injury, go to the urgent treatment centre. That sounds like a very minor cold, you know, self-care. That sounds like a terrible sore throat, come and see me at 10 o'clock. You know, it should be very, very simple and very easy for a member of the public to navigate the health service. And that simple idea that if you need to access the health service outside of emergencies and all that kind of stuff, you're either in 111 or your own doctor's surgery, and they will ask you the right questions and get you booked in the right place, is a very simple premise.
Yeah, that is indeed our intention. Do we have any new points, please, from some new voices? Would be good. Thank you.
I'm not entirely sure all of these are new, but some of them weren't.
That's fine.
Entirely answered.
Fire away.
I thought the point you just raised was primarily about how you would then convey the message of the new services and how that would work, given that the consultation hasn't reached everyone, rather than why wasn't the consultation more wide-reaching. If you've already tried everything, it's a good point.
point.
And it didn't reach everyone.
That's a really good point.
You reach everyone?
Yeah, good point. I can only write that point down.
It's not really my point, but it's her point.
Okay.
Has there been any modelling for how A&E usage will be affected by moving the minor injuries over there, centralising it? Maybe people going to Northern General, they're not sure which one to go to. Has there been any modelling if A&E usage would actually go up, or the effect of the movement to that? Just as a side point, the amount of shuttle buses from Hallamshire Hospital has been cut to any to the Northern General. How does that message like mesh into this?
I didn't know that.
And for the extra appointments, you said it's half an patient in hours for GPs?
In practice.
Okay. Is that an average across the whole city? And that's the impact of moving.
It's definitely an average.
Yes.
Then the walk-in movement doesn't affect an average. It affects a specific area.
Which is the thing saying there's certain practices we need to... Sorry, I'm answering the question.
That's fine.
Certain practices we need to look at more carefully.
Absolutely.
The student will be the...
So it would be the student one and the city centre ones that would particularly need to make sure that they get extra support and help achieving their access.
What extra resources are planned to be given to them, then, was my question on that. And we've got this, like, it's been brought up time and time again, like, we don't have that many GPs, etc. It's not looking better. We're not realistically thinking we'd get more GPs in there than I imagine. So what can we realistically do? Especially if, like, there's no extra funding for this, it's just reallocation. Can I just do one last one? So for the consultation, it was brought up a lot of times about, like, the lack of choice, but why wasn't there a specific option? Just, like, for the format of none of the... There wasn't a none of the above, was there? Why wasn't there a specific tick box for that? Just not relying on other, etc., because that's quite leading, just to give free answers. But why wasn't there a specific option?
Yeah, okay. Should we... Is there another question, or should we take those first?
Thanks.
Should we take those first? Can I take the last one first, if that's all right? I think it's for us to make a proposal and people to have a go at it, actually. I think it's our responsibility to do that. We know quite a lot about how the system works. We don't know everything. We anticipate things about demand. There's modelling about demand and so on, modelling about the workforce crisis that we've got. And I think it's our responsibility to make some sensible suggestions. However, what I would say is, if you don't like 1, 2 or 3, you can write option 4 down, and I'd like to know what it is. If it's just none of the above, that isn't fantastically helpful, unfortunately. If you could write option 4 is and say what you want, that would be really, really welcomed, and we will look at that. And some people have done that, and that is a really helpful way to go. Of course, if we could have everything and pay for everything, maybe that would be the best of all, but we've got a limited resource and we've got a growing demand and a limited workforce, so we have to sort of match all those things together, and we are where we are. It's not a perfect world, but we can design the system to be as good as it can be, and we think we can make it better by doing this, and with your support and your feedback about this, hopefully we will get to that point. You raised a couple of other points, colleagues. Do you want to have a look at any of that?
There was one question that was sort of about how you invest money into general practice, how you do get resource in there, and the truth is, at the moment, it's very difficult. There are bits and bobs of funding. There are bits and bobs of non-recurrent funding, some of which is badged for changing bits of how you work in a neighbourhood and that kind of stuff. But if there's a huge, massive recurrent pot for extra investment in general practice that I knew about, I would be spending it. We are continuing to try and do cute and clever things with the money to try and free up money for general practice. And obviously, one of the things we're trying to do to free up money for general practice is look at how we spend money on urgent care and make some changes there. What we will commit to is that any money that we get that is meant to be going to general practice, that we will send it to where it's meant to be going. At the end of the day, if you look at what the NHS spends its money on, it, 2/3 of it is staff, and that's more than that in general practice. I think that the general practice is the most efficient part of the health service in terms of bang for your buck, and it's under huge pressure. But actually, it only has to improve a little bit to make a big hit on the system. So you're not talking about needing twice as many nurses or twice as many doctors per practice to offset how busy A&E is. You're only talking about, you know, the equivalent of, you know, half a nurse or half a doctor a week type effect per practice, and it makes a big difference at scale week by week by week. So it's not about, you know, doubling the investment or anything like that. It's about trying to incrementally put more and more money into the service, and that will make a big difference.
I was going to think about the modelling issue. I'm sorry I don't have it in my head. I know we've done those sort of figures about modelling, and I'm apologies, I just don't have it in my head. It's quite difficult to model because it's about how people will behave, and it's not, people don't just present with illness because they're ill. So when I was training, I learned that people present with 1 in 10 of their symptoms to a doctor. And I remember thinking at the time, if that goes down, we're in trouble. And it has gone down a bit because every age group comes a bit more often than they used to. If you look at the graphs, they're sort of like that over the 10-year period. So, you know, general practice appointments have actually gone up, I think, by 60% or something in the last 10 years, but people wouldn't know it. And then the frail elderly population sort of doubled, and they're very complex. So very difficult to model. And people will say, well, how's A&E going to cope with all the patients from Broad Lane, and how's general practice going to cope with all Broad Lane? And you think, well, which one? Which way? They're not going to go to both. You can sort of look at it backwards in that what happens when Broad Lane opened, what difference does that make to A&E? And it made no difference at all. The numbers didn't drop at all at the Northern General. They did it at the Children's. They dropped by about 8%. And nationally, the figures are there's about a 5% drop if you open a walking centre. And that, if you put that in front of A&E, there's about a 10% drop. So that makes sense. If you think of it more of saying actually we'll be taking some minor people out of A&E if we had an urgent treatment centre next to A&E, it should actually theoretically increase the amount of space that's available at A&E. But it's very difficult to model, and it's hard to guess. As I say, national figures makes a 5% difference. We didn't see anything in Sheffield.
I think I would just add that we really can't have a plan that increases pressure on A&E. St John is right, it's difficult to model. Doesn't mean we haven't tried, because we have tried, and we're doing everything we can. We're already doing a lot of work with the A&E department anyway, actually, to help relieve their pressure, and this will be another component of that.
It is probably worthwhile saying that A&E obviously does deal with minor illness, and it does deal with minor injuries already, even if that work moves, so to speak, into an urgent treatment centre in the future. But it deals with that work very efficiently. And quickly, you hear a lot about the 4-hour target and all that sort of stuff, but that tends to skew to people in on trolleys and things like that that are needing a bed. So it's different issues that affect those delays to do with the frail elderly and long stays in hospital and difficulty getting people out of hospital, which is a totally different issue. So in terms of that big footfall, that throughput stuff, you know, the minor injuries, the minor illness, we're not saying A&E doesn't deal with those very efficiently, because it's very quick at dealing with them. It's just not the best place for minor illness in particular.
I just want to make one point, which is not then to do with us, it's to do with the population in Sheffield, and by and large Sheffield people are very good at using A&E appropriately. Alright, so it's about 11% use it where they shouldn't be going, so which makes us very good. There's a paper come out this week, and we were the best city out of 12, so it's rather nice to see that. So I don't want to give the impression that I think the population in Sheffield goes the wrong place all the time. That's not the case. The population in Sheffield is very good.
We've got about 6 precious minutes left. Have we got some some new voices and some new points? Let's go as quickly as we can. And we'll try and keep our answers even shorter.
Hi, thank you very much for coming and speaking to us today. I have just been thinking a bit, and would it be kind of, would you consider kind of phasing the things out? Because I'm a bit worried that you would close the minor illnesses unit, and like this gentleman here, there'd be a lot of people, if the GPs didn't pick up the slack quick enough, would end up in quite a bad situation. Would you phase it out? How would it work? And how would you make sure that the GPs were picking up the slack? And what would you have in place to make sure that happened?
Yeah, that's a good point. Another question?
Yeah, this should be a quick one. You say you want people to start using 111 and call their GP practices to then be referred to minor injuries. Would that then be able to? Would you be able to like have appointment systems for minor injuries to speed up the whole process? Because obviously people don't want to go and just sit there for 3 or 4 hours. If there was appointments, it would save a lot of people a lot of time.
Yeah, good point. And one more.
There's one down here.
Yes.
We have, last year we had about 1,000 students that came for summer school. This year it's grown bigger, so I'm thinking about those students whose level of English is lower. They find that the Broad Lane Medical Centre is useful, plus the University Health Service. They wouldn't know necessarily how to get to Northern General.
Yeah.
So have they been factored into this consultation or not yet?
Okay. Thank you. Good question. Three good questions. Can I have a go at the first one? I can get to choose the easy one, can't I? A few people have asked us to consider phasing out rather than just stopping a service or even double running. If we were able to attract some additional funding, I think we would quite like to do that. This is not to prejudge any conclusion, by the way. But when we have decided what we'd like to do, if that was an option, then I think we would have to. I think in the ideal world, that might be what we would do. Certainly, one or two of the MPs think we should do that, for example, and other people have raised it. But whether we'll actually have the funding to do it, and we'll have to somehow dovetail the old system with the new, without double running, that will depend on resources, I think. So,
and we are obviously continuing to try and strive to improve general practice through our work with practices and neighbourhoods over the next few years anyway, so we're hoping to get a lot of improvements in train and underway before any structural changes to big urgent care services happen.
I think we are intending to offer appointments for minor injuries.
So 111 want to be able to offer definite appointments. As far as I'm aware, I don't think we have factored in those people. I'm looking up at the back and trying to think, do you know if we have? I don't think we've factored in. That's new, and we need to take note of that. Yeah, thank you.
So that's very helpful intervention, actually. So we'll...
I think I have a friend that used to work there, actually, so I'm sort of quite annoyed at myself for not picking that up. Yeah.
Do you make sure they all register at the University Health Centre?
We give them, on the arrival day, we give them a presentation, so we tell them about the University Health Service if they need to go there.
Good. Right. Okay, we have about 30 seconds left. So I think what I would like to do is wrap up. I'd really like to thank you very much for coming, and I'd like to thank you for your feedback. Some new problems we've not heard of before, although many you've brought your own slant, and that's valuable as well to some of the other themes that we've heard already through some of our other meetings. I'd like to thank Kieran and colleagues. Kieran, did you want to say anything to finish? Okay, so I'd like to thank you for your hospitality, and thank you very much for your giving your spare time. It's very much appreciated. Have a safe journey. Thank you.